This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The city of Peoria derives its name from the Peoria Native American tribe, descendants of the Mound Civilization and members of the Illini Confederation. But until recently, city leaders didn't know the Peoria tribe still existed. In a conversation with WCBU's Hannah Alani, lifelong Peorian and Native American Joe Lakota describes her experience driving to Oklahoma to find modern-day members of the Peoria tribe. She also discusses what Thanksgiving means to her.
I'm in my 70s. In two life of my lifetimes, there were Native people living here. So this is not ancient history. You know, young kids today, they think the Vietnam War's the old thing. But the Indian people living here is not that old a thing. And for us, it was yesterday.
Can you tell us a bit about what you know about the Peoria tribe and any tribes that lived here and would still be here today if not for the colonial expansion?
Well, I was living here when my kids were little, and I knew the lady that was head of the library downtown. And she said, we'd like to do a big program on Native Americans. And in doing that, I started asking about the Peoria Indians. And I was told repeatedly that they didn't exist anymore, that they were wiped out. They had lived down on the river, and they had been raided and murdered, and a few had gone up the river around Chillicothe, and then they went up there, you know, but that they had all been murdered. Well, then finally there was a man that lived up in Lakin, and he said, oh no, they live in Oklahoma. Well, I had a $50 car. It was about ready to blow a gasket, but I put my two kids in the back seat, and we took off for Oklahoma to find them. And as it was, they were right over the border of Illinois into Oklahoma in a place, Miami, Oklahoma. And the Miami tribe and the Peoria tribe have Indian centers and everything there. So I found them. And then they did come back here for a return to Pimitui Powwows, but they always came back here. They said, we always go back. That's our home. So they would come in groups and come and look at the river and see what was going on around here. Nobody would know they were coming. See, that still goes on. So this, they still think of this as their home.
And they had been coming back to Peoria with no one here knowing or noticing
That's right.
The Native people. So what year was it that you went and met them?
Oh, that would have been 40 years ago or 45 years ago, long time ago.
And how did things change once people who live in Peoria today realized that there was this tribe still living, still coming back to the city to visit?
Well, actually, the first year we held the Return to Pimitui Powwow, it was called Return, and the Peoria people were the guests of the city of Peoria. And down there where the Mark Twain is, they gave them hotel rooms, and they took them put them in a fancy bus and took them around, you know, up to Grandview Drive and all the beautiful places here in Peoria. It is a beautiful place we live in. I don't like it when people talk bad because it is a beautiful place. I mean, I lived in New Mexico, the land of enchantment. So if I say Peoria is beautiful, I'm coming from a point of reference. So, and they were well treated, but that was 1 year. But they did come back, and other tribes came. We actually have a Kickapoo family that lives in the area. But we have a community here. We've had a drum here for 30 years, Eagle Ridge. Two of my sons are on that drum. We'll go out to schools or libraries. We do this a lot, our group, Eagle Ridge and Friends. And we have a dance troupe of over 20 people when we pull it together. People come from distance. We do a huge programs at summer camp. We have a permaculture garden out there. But we usually go to a distance for powwows, or actually to South Dakota or someplace like that for ceremonies. You know, we raised about $7,000 for Standing Rock here with the help of Kenny's downtown and different places.
You're listening to an interview with Joe Lakota on All Things Peoria. A lifelong Peorian and former educator, Joe Lakota is a member of the Walla Walla and Lakota tribes. How do you think Thanksgiving should be taught in schools? How did you approach teaching this to students?
Well, there's a new book called Braiding Sweetgrass, written by a Potawatomi woman. Of course, the Potawatomis lived here. If you have a farm, it's probably Potawatomi homeland. If you've dug up arrowheads, so forth, many of them probably belong to those people. But Thanksgiving what I see when I think of Thanksgiving is the great chief, Philip, his head on a pole outside the European village there after he had fed and clothed and nurtured these people. And when they realized he wasn't going to comply with everything they wanted, his head was on a pole. The people that came here were hungry and dirty. And I had someone really get angry at me for one time for saying that. But they didn't, a lot of people in Europe didn't, in England particularly, weren't into bathing. They thought it was unhealthy. So they came sick in that way, and the Indians took care of them. But anyway, why I would mention the book, Braiding Sweetgrass, is because she gives there in its pages of the prayer that you say daily, the Thanksgiving prayer. And they say it at the beginning of a meeting because then everybody's on the same page. Yeah, it's not majority rules. It's everybody thinking as one. So you start out and you're thankful for the air. Then you're thankful for the earth that feeds us, the air that we breathe. Then you're thankful for the animals. You're thankful for the trees that give us oxygen and shade and warmth. So it goes on and on and on. And by the end, everybody realizes we are all one here.
How do you think it should be celebrated, if it should be celebrated at all?
To me, I celebrate Thanksgiving because I am terribly thankful, but I'm also very mindful. You know, it's like Columbus. He was a horrible, horrible person. And there are many great Italians. He wouldn't have gotten here but for his Portuguese sailors, so many great Portuguese. So why honor the one who sold children into slavery or chopped off people's hands because they didn't have gold in their island and crazy things? He was insane. So if you're not sorry about that, or if you're not sorry about slavery and the unspeakable, horrific acts of slavery or the genocide of Native people, if you're not sorry that, don't ever, ever be sorry about anything. It's horrible things that happened. The way the Irish were treated when they came here, the Italians, the German and Japanese Americans, how they were treated, all that silliness. So Thanksgiving, it's you know, it makes a cute little picture, doesn't it? But basically, they didn't. The white folk were not feeding the Indians. All they had in their hand was a Bible. They were starving to death. So that's what to be thankful for, the kindness of good people. And as my son always says, that's the real brave people are the kind people. How brave are you? Can you be kind? Can you see what people around you need? That's being a warrior. That's being brave.
If there's something, one thing that you'd like our listeners to kind of take away from this, a message to impart upon our Peoria community, what would you like that to be?
Matake Oyasan. We are all related. Nobody is the other. No living thing is the other. So let us come together at the same table and give thanks for all that we have been given.
Wow. What language was that?
That's Lakota. I'm not fluent, but that's Lakota.
That's Joe Lakota speaking with WCBU's Hannah Alani about the Peoria Native American tribe, Thanksgiving, and what it's like being Native today. And coming up in 6 minutes on All Things Peoria, Joe Deacon talks with Peoria Rivermen's veteran team doctor about the unique challenges of his job. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The COVID vaccine is a big reason why we'll soon be able to share a big holiday meal together with our extended families for the first time in 2 years. And the vaccine is also a big reason why that might be miserable. That's because the life-saving vaccine is polarizing. It's bound to be a thorny topic of dinner conversation at Thanksgiving and beyond. To help navigate family vaccine etiquette, Ryan Denham spoke with Erin Osborne, Social Service Coordinator at Unity Point's Behavioral Health Service Line. They started with a simple dilemma. What should you consider if your vaccinated family is invited to a gathering where you know Uncle Bob or Aunt Alice are not vaccinated?
If you are concerned about being around somebody that's unvaccinated, then beforehand decide, do you want to attend that gathering or not? right? With that recognition in mind. There's nothing wrong with saying no. I think a lot of times we feel guilty. We guilt ourselves into doing things that maybe we shouldn't do or we don't feel comfortable doing. And it's okay to set boundaries.
Is it okay to like ask someone's vaccination status if you're going to an event like that?
I think that it's up to you personally. If you're worried about it, I would say make sure you wear a mask. Go prepared that everybody's unvaccinated. And if you find out, right, that they're vaccinated, then you can adjust as you go through the evening, but go prepared with the idea in mind that they're not.
I wonder if you could flesh out the boundaries thing that you were talking about. More specifically, what could that look like? How do you do that in a way that's like, doesn't feel like you're in a business meeting, you know?
Where it's I know.
Because it is exactly. People that you love, you know, theoretically.
Exactly. Listen, if it's your loved ones and you know beforehand Uncle Bob is coming and Uncle Bob may bring up this topic, then be ready, have a planned rehearsed response to that. You know, hey, I appreciate you bringing that up. However, this is our time for reflection and I would prefer that we not discuss that during dinner. I mean, you can set that boundary with him beforehand or during. You can also you can redirect the conversation and steer it away from the sensitive topic at hand and say, listen, instead of talking about that, what did you do over this past year to stay fit, healthy, and calm, right? What is on your bucket list for next year? You can completely redirect that conversation in the moment as well. It's a helpful tip so that you don't feel like you keep saying the same thing. I don't want to talk about that. Then what do you want to talk about? What does feel safe for you, right? Usually we want to keep those sensitive topics, religion, politics, COVID-19 vaccination. Those sensitive topics are not necessarily what we want to discuss to bring our family together. Those topics tend to bring division, right? We're not always going to see it at the same way. Doesn't mean that we can't respect that, but don't get lost in it. You're here to celebrate each other and spend time together. How are you going to do that successfully?
So you're on the front lines of mental health and behavioral health in the greater Peoria area. Can you talk about the toll that the pandemic has taken on people and how we should bring that understanding, that empathy with us to the dinner table as we're sitting across from people and having, you know, maybe some awkward conversations?
We have seen an increase in mental health diagnosis, depression, anxiety with the COVID pandemic. Certainly, we've even seen psychosis with the prolonged long-term haul COVID survivors. We've been inundated with news, right, about COVID and the toll that it's taken on our community. And so that's really hard to carry on your hearts and minds all the time. And with the recognition that this has truly impacted people in ways that none of us can necessarily fully understand. But we can surround each other with love and lift each other up and say, listen, in spite of this, because we've all gone through it, we're going to continue to build our resilience. How you do that? You get back to yourself, right? You show appreciation. You find the moments of gratitude when you're holding your breath and you're concerned about what the next moment is, to just be grateful that you're in this moment that you have, because we've taken so much for granted. If anything I've learned through COVID is that I took a lot of things for granted. And so this holiday season, this is not something I want to take for granted. I want to spend it with you intentionally, connecting with my loved ones, showing appreciation and saying thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I know that that was incredibly challenging. This has been a really difficult year, but I'm just so glad you're here with me today.
That's Erin Osborne, Social Service Coordinator at the Unity Points Behavioral Health Service Line. She spoke with Ryan Denham. Osborne says there are many resources available to those who need some help around the holidays. You can find a link to Unity Points Behavioral Health Services at wcbu.org.
A tale written in the 19th century tells a story of an Afghan refugee and his unique friendship with a little girl in India.
I read Kabuliwala in school and I remember bawling like a baby.
A story with themes that still resonate today.
It reminds you that The person who's coming to your country is a human being like you're a human being.
On the next morning edition from NPR News.
I'm Ariel Jones. Listen weekdays from 4 till 9 a.m. on 89.9 WCBU and WCBU.org.
Support for WCBU comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The CPB's Community Service Grant helps WCBU bring you Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and more programming on which you depend for news, information, and entertainment. Additional support comes from WCBU listeners. This is 89.9 WCBU and WCBU.org.
This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. Unity Point Dr. Brandon Bakowitz isn't your typical family medicine physician. He's treated more than the normal share of patients who have been injured falling on ice, cut by sharp metal, struck in the face by hard objects, or gotten into physical altercations. Yes, Bakowitz is the team doctor for the Peoria Rivermen hockey team, a role he's held for 8 years. In a conversation with reporter Joe Deacon, Bakowitz discusses his work for the Rivermen and how COVID-19 has impacted treatment for pro athletes.
It's kind of turned our world upside down. It's made us a lot more cautious. A lot of things that would be considered normal day-to-day stuff that we wouldn't think a whole lot about. You know, how close can we sit these guys together? Where are they at on the bench? Where are we putting the opposing team? What are we doing for the officials? All those things just have a different perspective on them now, and what is the safest thing for everybody to be doing. It's made us look at kind of our routine treatments and protocols and revise them for just this new pandemic world that we live in.
Hockey is kind of a bit of a violent sport, so that must keep you pretty busy then, right?
It does, unfortunately, or fortunately for the fans. I'm about the only guy sitting in the seats that has a cringe on my face when guys start fighting and going at it with each other. But it is. We've had some, you know, just normal injuries over the years where guys get in fights, and we've got busted open faces and broken noses and all sorts of fun stuff like that. And a couple years ago, we had a little more serious injury where we had a guy out on the ice take a skate to the thigh and opened up his leg on the ice. So that was unfortunately a little more distressing, but it is a violent sport. These guys love what they're doing, and they know it's going to be a little violent when they get out there.
What kind of injuries do you see most often, and what are some of the most severe ones you see?
So game days, the biggest injuries we tend to see are the lacerations from either guys getting in fights, getting hit in the face with sticks, pucks, different flying objects on the ice. So that's kind of the game day one. The outside of game day and the training room is kind of the average just musculoskeletal injury, sprains, strains, this is sore, this hurts. Fortunately, in hockey, we don't see as many of the really big, bad ACL injuries or knee tears and sprains, things like that, which is very fortunate for those guys. A lot of upper extremity injuries, shoulder dislocations.
How does treating athletes differ from treating regular everyday people, if at all?
Good question. They are regular people just like the rest of us. I don't care if it's at the major league level, the NBA level, the wherever you're looking at it. You know, they're still patients. Just because everybody watches them on TV or knows them by name, they still need and deserve the same care that we give everybody else. The hardest part about it is trying to balance how quickly can we get somebody back into the game or through rehab or through a broken bone and back doing what we need them to do as part of the team. You know, we'll be able to put guys on the injured reserve list and keep them on IR for days, weeks, how many ever we need. But that's also then a missing piece of our team that we need back.
What are hockey players like as patients? Are they more difficult? Are they receptive to advice, things like that?
I see it both ways. I've got guys that, you know, the first season in, they're brand new. They don't know you. You don't know them. You know, they may be new to the professional hockey arena, coming straight out of school or something like that. And sometimes it just takes getting that relationship and letting them know that you do have their best interest in mind, and you know you're gonna back them up and do what you think is in their best interest. other guys I've known for years. We've got some local Peoria guys skating on our team right now, and they're from Peoria, and they've played in Peoria as long as I've been with the team. And those guys, I know them, and we've got great relationships. And as much as they don't like it when I tell them, hey, here's certain things that we need to do, they respect it, and they're all on board, because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, man. We want these guys back out on the ice, winning games, and bringing trophies back to Peoria.
What do you find to be the most interesting or rewarding aspect of being the team doctor for the Peoria Rivermen?
The reason I like a lot of the stuff I do is it's just kind of that childhood fantasy of, hey, I'm hanging out in a professional locker room, and I get to hang out with these professional athletes that I know I can't be. We always have fun in high school playing sports, and when you're younger, and then as we get older, we tend to lose some of that scheduled, organized sports stuff. So it's awesome being a part of the team and being involved in these guys' lives and just getting to know them other than just the guys that are out on the ice.
That's Peoria Rivermen hockey team doctor Brandon Bakowitz talking with WCBU's Joe Deacon. For more of their conversation, go to WCBU.org. Thanks for choosing All Things Peoria on WCBU. I'm Daniel Musisi. We had story help today from Hannah Alani, Ryan Denham, and Joe Deacon. You can find all of today's stories at WCBU.org. That's also where you'll find links to subscribe to the All Things Peoria podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or NPR One. And we want to know what you think of the show, so comment on our Facebook page. We're Peoria Public Radio. Or follow us on Twitter at WCBU Radio. This is WCBU Peoria, 89.9 FM, and WCBU.org, a public service of Bradley University and Illinois State University.